the Minister of Assistance, sensing my innermost intentions, addressed me in a firm tone of voice, "I am ready to hear you, my friend." Although a prey to indecision, I was about to instinctively solicit any medical activity in the colony, when my conscience prompted a warning, "Why ask for special work? Would that not be falling again into human error, reverting to that old vanity which does not tolerate any occupation but the one befitting one's special status and schooling?" These thoughts restored my equilibrium, and, rather confused, I began, "I took the liberty to come to you today to ask your assistance in procuring some sort of work for me. Now that the treatment received here has restored my health, I am beginning to miss my old occupations. Any task will be welcomed, as long as it keeps me from inactivity." Clarence looked at me long and intently, as if trying to gauge my innermost thoughts. "I see. With your lips you ask for any kind of work, but deep in your heart what you really miss is your consulting room, your patients, and all the atmosphere of medical service with which the Lord deigned to honor you on earth." So far his words were most encouraging, and with my heart filled with hope, I nodded in assent. After a long pause, the minister proceeded, "You must not forget, however, that very often our Father honors us with his confidence, and that we often betray his trust by underestimating the dignity of the call. You, for instance, went through your medical courses on earth surrounded by every facility. You never knew the price of a single book, as your parents' generosity sought to all your needs. As soon as you graduated, lucrative positions were already waiting for you. Thus, you were spared the poor doctor's hard struggle to build a practice. You prospered most rapidly in your career. Unfortunately, you transformed the advantages you obtained into a means of bringing about the premature death of your physical body. While young and strong, you committed numerous abuses in the exercise of the profession which Jesus granted you." At that firm but kind lecture, I felt strangely disturbed, but managed to reply respectfully, "I recognize the justice of your observations, but I should be grateful if you would grant me the means of repaying my debts by devoting myself, heart and soul, to the patients in this hospital." "A very noble impulse," said Clarence without severity. "Nevertheless, it must be remembered that the exercise of a profession on earth is a call from our Father summoning his creatures to come into the divine temples of service. For us here a degree is a mere identification card, but on earth it usually means an open door to all sorts of abuse. The person who receives such a card is given the opportunity to study and cooperate with the Lord and his divine work on the planet. This principle is applicable to all earthly activities, regardless of their nature and class conventions. You, my brother, were granted a medical card, and consequently were admitted into the Temple of Medicine. However, your line of conduct does not justify my endorsing your present wish. How could I appoint you to treat spirit patients, when on earth you insisted on limiting your professional observations to the physical body? I do not deny your capacity as an excellent physiologist, but the field of life is much wider. What would you think of a botanist who based his definitions on the mere examination of the dry bark of a few trees? A great number of earthly physicians prefer mathematical conclusions in their anatomical work. Now, I quite agree that mathematics is a most respectable science, but it is not the only one in the universe. As you are already aware, a doctor cannot draw the line at diagnoses and terminologies. He must go deeper, and scrutinize the innermost recesses of the soul. On earth, many of your colleagues become true slaves to academic conventionalism because of their professional life. Very few succeed in crossing prejudices. The rare exceptions are scoffed at by society, and looked down upon by their colleagues. I was lost in amazement. I had never dreamed of such lofty notions of professional responsibility. I was staggered by the idea of a college degree being merely a ticket giving admittance into zones of work in collaboration with the Lord. Speechless, I waited for the Minister of Assistance to resume his elucidations. "As you see," he went on, "you have not prepared yourself for our activities. Generous benefactor," I ventured to say, "I understand the lessons and submit myself to the obvious." Trying to keep back my tears, "I beg it humbly, I am willing to accept any kind of occupation in this colony of work and peace. Clarence, showing me a deep look of approval, answered, "My friend, you have listened to a few bitter truths. Now let me add a little word of encouragement. You cannot, as yet, become a doctor in the Astral City, but in due time you will be admitted as an apprentice. Your present situation is not the best. Nevertheless, it is a promising one, owing to the intercessional petitions sent to the Ministry of Assistance on your behalf." "My mother?" I inquired, transported with bliss. "Yes," assented the minister, "your mother, and other friends in whose heart you planted the seed of gratitude. Soon after your arrival here, I requested that the Ministry of Elucidation have your records sent to me. I have already examined them most carefully, and found much rashness and thoughtlessness, and many abuses. I also found that, in your 15 years of medical practice, 6,000 poor patients received free medical attendance in your clinic. Most often you went through those meritorious deeds quite heedlessly. Still, you can see now that, even if carelessly done, a good deed attracts blessings to the one who carries it out. Of 6,000, 15 have not forgotten you, and have been sending incessant appeals on your behalf. I must explain, also, that even the forgotten benefit of your work weighs in your favor, putting a stop to those surprising elucidations." Clarence added with a smile, "You will learn new lessons here, and after instructive experiences, you will cooperate efficiently with us, preparing at the same time for your own progress towards the infinite." I was overjoyed. For the first time since my arrival at the colony, I cried out of pure happiness. Who on earth would understand such emotions? Still, I felt it necessary to quiet my heart to enter the sublimity of divine silence. Chapter 15, My Mother's Visit. Following Clarence's advice, I tried hard to restore my strength in order to start my apprenticeship as soon as possible. In the old days, I might have taken offense at the minister's seemingly harsh remarks, but under the circumstances, recollecting my past terrors, I could only feel comforted. As a prisoner of the flesh, the soul is almost always wrapped in thick mists of illusion. Only now did I realize that an earthly life cannot be lived thoughtlessly. The real importance of an incarnation loomed clearly before my eyes. Remembering all the opportunities I had wasted, I recognized that Clarence had plenty of reason to have spoken to me as he had. I spent many days immersed in contemplation. Although I refrained from asking for any more concessions, deep in my heart I longed to visit my earthly home. The benefactors of the Ministry of Assistance had been extremely generous to me and seemed to follow all of my thoughts. Therefore, if they did not spontaneously grant such a wish, it must be because the time had not yet come for it. Thus I held my peace, resigned, though somewhat wistful. Lysus did his best to cheer me up with his lively conversation and encouraging remarks, but I was going through that phase of spiritual retreat when a man retires within himself to face his innermost conscience. One day, however, my attendant came into my room and exclaimed, "Guess who has come to see you?" Lysus, smiling face and sparkling eyes, gave him away. "My mother," I exclaimed confidently. Stunned with joy, I saw my mother approaching with outstretched arms. "My child, my child. Come into my arms, my dear one." I cannot describe what happened then. All of a sudden, I felt like the little boy who used to play in the rain, barefoot in the sandy soil of our garden. In that sacred and joyful moment I held her tenderly in my arms, until even our tears blended. I cannot say how long we remained that way, but at last she broke the enchantment. "Now, now, my boy, don't give free rein to your emotions. You know that even excessive happiness taxes the heart. You are still weak, do not waste your energy." Instead of carrying my dear old mother in my arms, as I had done in the last weeks of her passage on earth, it was she who dried my tears and led me to the couch. I sat down beside her and laid my head tenderly on her knees. She stroked my hair gently, recounting precious memories. I felt at that moment that I was the happiest of men. I had the impression of being anchored in the safest of harbors after a hard struggle on the stormy seas. My mother's presence was a great comfort to my heart, and those moments seemed like a blissful dream. Like a little boy looking for comfort in familiar objects, I attentively observed her clothes, a perfecto copy of those say used to wear at home. I recognized the dark dress, the blue shawl, the woolen stockings. I gazed at her small head crowned with snow-white hair, at the wrinkles on her face, at her invariably sweet and calm expression. Speechless and trembling with joy, I stroked her hands, while she, stronger than I, spoke serenely, "The Lord never forgets us, my child. We shall never be able to thank Him for all His kindness. How long our separation has been, but you mustn't think that I had forgotten you. Sometimes Providence parts us temporarily so that we may learn divine love." Feeling that her affection was the same as ever, I began to recall again the sting of old grievances. Oh, how difficult it is to get rid of earthly residues! How heavy is the burden of centuries of imperfections! Clarence had often exhorted me to refrain from lamenting. Isis, too, had spared me his warnings. Yet now, resting in my mother's arms, all my old wounds seemed to bleed again. I started to bitterly recall my past sufferings, and my tears of joy gave way to those of self-pity. I did not realize then that her visit was not to be taken simply for the gratification of my whims, but as one more blessing from divine mercy. Relapsing into my old habit of making my mother the patient victim of my endless grievances, I now began to painfully recount all of my past tribulations. On earth, mothers are often merely slaves in their children's eyes. Very rare are those who realize the value of their mother's devotion before being deprived of it. I had been no exception. My mother listened in silence, her face clouded by an expression of indescribable sadness. Holding me tight to her heart, her eyes full of tears, she spoke tenderly, "Oh, my son, don't complain. Didn't our generous Clarence give you sound advice on that subject? Let's be thankful to our Father for this blessed meeting. Let's never forget we are now in a different school, learning to become true children of God. As a mother on earth, I didn't always succeed in guiding you in the best way. Therefore I, too, am working to control my feelings by readjusting my heart. Oh, your tears are stirring my own earthly feelings, drawing me back into a path I have already trodden. I should like to believe your complaints justified, to set you up as the most virtuous creature in the universe, but it would be out of accordance with the new lessons we are learning. In the world one might make allowances for such behavior, here it is quite impossible. We must consider the Lord before everything else. You aren't the only discarnate man redeeming his errors, nor am I the only mother parted from her loved ones. The merit of our suffering, my son, doesn't lie in the tears it makes us shed, nor in the bleeding wounds it inflicts on us, but in the gateway of light it opens up to us. Tears and wounds are only a blessed means of helping us to purify our soul." After a prolonged pause, during which my conscience addressed me firmly, she resumed, "Why not enjoy these fleeting moments in the sunshine of love, instead of wasting them in the shadows of unhappiness? Let's serve, my child, and serve cheerfully, while at the same time constantly rejoicing in the Lord. Change your mental attitude, I beg you. Your confidence in my love and your affection for me bring me sublime happiness, but I can't return to experiences which have passed. We must love each other now with a great and sacred divine love." Those inspiring words awakened me, and I had the impression that my mother's love radiated invigorating fluids which lifted my heart. She gazed at me contentedly, transfigured by a radiant smile, and as I rose and respectfully kissed her forehead, it struck me that I had never before seen her so beautiful and so loving. Chapter 16, A Confidential Talk. My mother's words comforted and encouraged me considerably. She prescribed work as a lenitive to my suffering and tribulations, which she regarded as blessings and valuable lessons. An ineffable contentment unexpectedly filled my spirit. In a strange way, those maternal admonitions seemed to give me new strength. I felt a different man, more cheerful, lively and happy. "Oh, mother," I said, "how wonderful the plain where you live must be. What sublime spiritual thoughts, what bliss." She smiled knowingly and explained, "A higher sphere, my child, always requires more work and greater devotion. You mustn't imagine that your mother spends her time in spiritual ecstasy, exempt from all meritorious tasks. I don't mean to convey the least shadow of sadness or discontent about the situation in which I find myself, but rather to reveal my new responsibility to you. Since I returned from Earth, I have been working incessantly for our spiritual regeneration. Many entities, on leaving their physical bodies, remain bound to their earthly home, unable to break away from their loved ones. Here, however, I have learned that one who truly loves must work constantly in order to be able to serve. Therefore, since my arrival here, I have been trying hard to obtain the privilege of helping those we so dearly cherish. And my father, I asked, where is he? Why hasn't he come with you? My mother's face bore a strange expression as she replied, Alas, your father. For 12 years he has been caught in a dense section of the shadows of the lower zone. On Earth he always gave us the impression of being faithful to family traditions and meticulous in the observance of the ethical code of the upper business circles he belonged to until the end of his days. Outwardly he seemed to possess a strong religious faith, but in reality he was weak, and maintained clandestine liaisons outside our home. 2 of his connections were women who were mentally tied with a vast band of evil entities. When Laird's Passover, his stay in the lower zones became extremely painful. The unfortunate creatures to whom he had made vain promises were waiting eagerly to involve him in dark shrouds of illusion. At first he tried to resist, to find me. He couldn't understand that the soul, after parting from its bodily form, will live the life of its essential nature, without false appearances. Laird's, therefore, was unable to sense my spiritual presence or perceive the devoted assistance of some of our friends. Having spent so many years pretending, he had damaged his psychic vision and restricted his vibratory range. Consequently, he found himself alone with those to whom he had thoughtlessly attuned his heart and mind. For some time the family principles and the pride of our name stirred in the depths of his spirit and he tried to fight against temptation, but finally gave in and was once again attracted into the shadows through his lack of perseverance and of a righteous and proper mental attitude. But is there no means of snatching him away from such degradation? I inquired, painfully impressed. Alas, my child, my mother continued, I visit him frequently, but he doesn't even notice my presence. His vibratory potential is still too low. I do my best to attract him to the right path through inspiration, but the only result I have obtained so far is make him shed a few contrite tears from time to time, without any serious resolutions. The wretched creatures who keep him prisoner intercept all my suggestions. I have been working intensely for many years, and have enlisted the assistance of friends in 5 different colonies of spiritual activities, including the Astral City. Once, Clarence almost succeeded in attracting him to the Ministry of Regeneration, but failed in the end. One cannot light a lamp that has neither wick nor oil. To raise Laird's and strengthen his spiritual vision, we must count on his mental willingness. Meanwhile the poor thing remains inactive within himself, divided between indifference and rebellion. After a long pause, she sighed and went on, Perhaps you don't know yet that your sisters Clara and Priscilla are still bound to the earth, living in the lower zones. You see, I am compelled to attend to everyone's needs. My only direct help has been the affectionate cooperation of your sister Louisa, who passed over when you were still a baby. She waited for me here for many years, and was my right hand in the strenuous tasks of assistance to our earthly family. She fought bravely by my side on behalf of your father, your sisters, and yourself. Lately, however, the spiritual perturbation of our family members still on Earth had been so great that she went back to Earth in a sublime gesture of abnegation, to reincarnate among them. I hope that you will soon be well, so that we may cooperate efficiently in the work of our Lord. I was staggered by the information about my father. What sort of struggles could he be facing? He had seemed to be a faithful observer of his religious obligations, he went to communion every Sunday. Lost in admiration at my mother's devotion, I inquired, but you are doing everything in your power to help father, in spite of his connections with those disreputable women? No, son, you mustn't call them that. They were also children of our Almighty Father. Say they were our sisters who are unsound, ignorant and unhappy. I am not interceding on Layard's behalf alone, but also for them, and I think I have found the means of attracting them all to my heart. I was filled with awe and surprise at such a great manifestation of self-denial. Then I remembered my own family and felt again the old yearning for my dear wife and children. In Clarence's and Liza's presence I had always managed to restrain my feelings and silence all of my questions, but my mother's kind glance gave me courage to speak. Her visit might not last much, so I availed myself of the opportunity, asking, "Couldn't you, who have been assisting Father so devoutly, give me some news of Zelia and the children? I long for the moment I can return home to help them, and I'm certain they must miss me as much as I miss them. How my poor wife must be suffering from this separation. I go and see my grandchildren from time to time, and they are well," she said, smiling sadly. After a few moments' reflection, she said, "Don't worry over the assistance to your family. Prepare yourself instead to successfully carry out your mission. There are questions that we must entrust to the Lord by raising our thoughts confidently to Him. Then and only then can we start working to solve them." Anxious as I was to gather any possible information, I tried to keep my mother on the subject, but she gently changed it. We talked for quite a long time, and her voice seemed to involve me in an atmosphere of sublime comfort. I was curious to know how she lived, so when she took her leave I asked permission to accompany her. "You mustn't come, my son. I am urgently expected at the transformation chambers in the Ministry of Communication, where I shall be provided with a fluidical means for the return journey. Besides, I must go and thank Minister Celius for the opportunity of playing you this visit." She kissed me and departed, leaving a lasting sensation of happiness in my heart. Chapter 17, Liza's Home. A few days after my mother's unexpected visit, I was summoned to Clarence's office. Surprised, I followed Liza's, who had come to fetch me. I was kindly received by the generous minister, and awaited his orders with pleasant expectation. "My friend," he said amiably, "you are henceforth allowed to pay visits of observation to all sections of our activities, except for the ministries of higher spirituality. Henry de Luna has informed me that your treatment was completed last week, so it is only right that you should now employ your time observing and learning." I turned to Liza's, eager to share my happiness, and was met with an exultant glance. I was simply overjoyed. It was the beginning of a new life. I would be able to join different schools and to do meaningful work. Clarence, judging my happiness, added, "As your stay in the hospital park is no longer necessary, I will study the question of your transfer to new lodgings. I will consult some of our institutions. If possible," Liza's interrupted eagerly, "I should very much like him to share our home during his period of observation. My mother would welcome him as another son." I looked gratefully at my generous companion. Clarence, in his turn, also gave him a look of approval, saying, "Very well, Liza's. Jesus rejoices with us whenever we open our hearts to a new friend." Unable to express my gratitude in words, I embraced my companion. Great joy can sometimes render us speechless. "Keep this document," Clarence continued, handling me a small folder. "It will serve as a permit to admittance to the ministries of regeneration, assistance, communication and elucidation for the period of 1 year. After that, we shall see what else can be done. Don't waste your time. My friend, learn all you can. Remember that the intervals between earthly sojourns must be worthily filled." I left the minister's office elated, arm in arm with Liza's. After a few minutes' walk, we arrived at a graceful cottage surrounded by a colorful garden. "Here we are," he announced. He rang a small bell, adding, "This is our home within the astral city." A soft ringing was heard inside the house and pleasant lady opened the door. "Mother," Liza's called out, introducing me. "Here is the brother I promised you." "Welcome, my friend," she exclaimed hospitably. "Please consider this house your home." Embracing me as if I were a true son, she added, "I understand that your mother doesn't live here. Therefore, you will have in me a sister, involved in maternal duties." I did not know how to thank her for her generous welcome. I was about to try, when she quickly interjected, You are forbidden to mention thanks. Please don't, or you would force me to remember some long-forgotten conventional earthly phrase for the sake of etiquette. We all laughed, and I added, May the Lord receive my gratefulness and pour it on this house as renewed blessings of peace and joy. We walked in. Everything was simple and comfortable. The furniture and objects were, on the whole, much like those on earth. There were pictures of deep spiritual significance, an unusually large piano, and resting on it a harp of delicate design. Isis, ready as usual to satisfy my curiosity, spoke, As you know, you were not met by harpist angels when you left earth. Instead, the harp before you awaits our own abilities. Now Isis, stop joking. His mother interrupted affectionately. Do you remember that last year the Ministry of Divine Union invited some of the residents of the Ministry of Elevation to hear some master musicians who passed through our city? Indeed I do, Mother. I only meant to say that harpists really exist, but in order to hear them we must develop our sense of spiritual hearing by striving for the knowledge of divine things. Later on, after giving some introductory information about myself, I learned that Liza's family came from an old town in the state of Rio de Janeiro, that his mother's name was Laura, and that his two sisters, Yolanda and Judith, lived with him as well. I was delighted at my first experience of a domesticity in the colony. The home atmosphere encouraged a sweet and heartwarming intimacy, and the family's gracious welcome stirred deep emotions in my spirit. As I was filled with questions, my kind hostess showed me some wonderful books. Perceiving my interest, she informed, As for literature, we have an enormous advantage here in the Astral City, all insidious writers, those who use their art to instill psychological poison, go straight to the lower zones, and as long as they persist in such a state they cannot stay here, not even in the Ministry of Regeneration. I could not help smiling as I marveled at the beautiful specimens of photographic art in the books she showed me. Afterwards, Lysis took me around the house, calling my attention to the bathing chamber, which was filled with interesting fixtures. Everything was so simple, yet so comfortable. I had hardly gotten over my amazement, when Laura summoned us to prayer. We sat in silence around a big table. As she switched on a large screen, I heard soft music. It was the evening service. I saw the familiar image of the government house, which had captured my attention so often in the hospital park. Now, however, a deep and mysterious happiness filled me as the blue heart appeared in the background, and my soul was filled with joy and gratefulness. Chapter 18, Love, the Food of Souls. As soon as the prayer was over, Laura invited me to the evening meal, which consisted of invigorating broth and fragrant fruits which tasted more like a delicious blend of concentrated fluids. I heard Laura remark genially, After all, our meals here are far more agreeable than they were on Earth. We have some districts which dispense with them together, but in the zone of the Ministry of Assistance we can't do so. Here the heavy tasks we perform consume a great deal of our energy. Hence, we are obligated to be continually making provisions of energy. That, however, added one of the young ladies, doesn't mean that we who work at the Ministries of Assistance and Regeneration are the only ones to depend on food. The other ministries, including Divine Union, don't dispense with it. The only difference in the food is the nature of its substance. In communication and elucidation, fruit is widely used, while in elevation, juices and concentrated fluids are more common. As for the Ministry of Divine Union, the process of nutrition goes beyond the imagination. Eager for immediate explanations, I shifted my gaze from Liza's to his mother. Everybody smiled at my natural perplexity, but Laura satisfied my curiosity. You may not be aware, my friend, that love is the major sustaining element for all creatures. From time to time, large delegations of instructors come to visit our city in order to convey the principles of spiritual nutrition. Love is the fundamental basis of all systems of nourishment in the different spheres of life. Physical diet, properly considered, is always a question of transitory materiality even here, as in the case of the earthly machines that need grease and oil. Love, and only love, is the source of sustenance for the soul. The more we ascend along the evolutionary plan of creation, the more thoroughly we understand that great truth. Don't you think that divine love is the mainspring of the universe?